This is Jeff Shatler, and you're listening to Pro Lacrosse Talk.
Right off the bat, there's Lyle Thompson.
Courier, Ogden.
Kylie Elmiller showing off those shifty skills.
Driver driving hard down the alley, and he scores.
What a goal from Josh Byrne.
Kayla Trainer
flips and scores.
You're kidding me.
By Dylan Warren.
Gets topside. Rambo scores.
Welcome to Pro Lacrosse Talk, your go-to podcast for interviews with professional players, coaches, and executives, as well as the latest news and analysis from all three professional lacrosse leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Adam Moore and Hutton Jackson.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, Pro Lacrosse fans? Welcome to another edition of Pro Lacrosse Talk presented by Fanatics. Reminder to visit prolacrossetalk.com/NLL shop or prolacrossetalk.com/NLL shop-CA for your official NLL team gear. They actually put up the Every Child Matters shirts back up there. So if you missed out the first time, you guys can still get one of those and donate to a good cause. I'm your host, Hutton Jackson. As always, joined by my co-host, Adam Moore. Adam, it's Super Bowl week. Not sure if I'm legally allowed to say that, but do you have any plans for the big game this coming weekend?
And nothing too crazy, to be honest with you, since it's two teams that I'm kind of indifferent about. I know as a Ravens fan, you're probably not rooting for the Bengals, but Joe Burrow is a fun guy to root for. And I don't have any qualms with anyone on the Rams either. So I'm just going to sit back. Hopefully it's a good game. Watch with some family and have some wings. I'm going to enjoy the food probably more than the football on Sunday, but looking forward to it.
Yeah, definitely, you know, pull for the Rams for Maddie's sake. You know, you've been married into a Ravens family. I know you don't really have a dog in the fight, but no, I can't bear to see Joe Burrow get a Super Bowl for Lamar Jackson. Sorry, Parker Blake, one of our contributors, who's a big Cincinnati Bengals fan. Now, if Parker was to be happy, that would be the only good thing to come of the Bengals winning the Super Bowl. But I just can't do it.
I have to say, man, like if you were going to rank the teams in your division, that if you had to pick another team in your division to win a Super Bowl, wouldn't it be the Bengals? Right?
You wouldn't
pick the Steelers for sure. You wouldn't pick the Browns. I mean, that just wouldn't happen anyway, so you wouldn't have to worry about it. And you know what? As a Eagles fan, 2017 was such a magical run. I mean, if you saw Lack's Twitter and Bird's Twitter kind of interact over the last few days, it was the 4-year anniversary of us winning and then 4-year anniversary of the Super Bowl parade yesterday. So it was such a magical run. And I wouldn't mind seeing Cincinnati kind of feel the same way. I love seeing people happy, Hutt. I love seeing people happy. And I think there's more Bengals fans than transplant Rams fans, if I'm being honest with you. So.
Yeah, true. But no, make a point. Matthew Stafford deserves this. Cooper Kupp deserves this. I don't want to see a Bengals Super Bowl. You are right. If I had to pick of the division winners, you know, and I couldn't select none of the above, I would much rather the Bengals over the other two teams. I really didn't have too many qualms with the Bengals. I mean, they knocked, you know, us out of the playoff contention a few times these past few seasons. That was kind of a heartbreaker before Lamar Jackson showed up. But for me, this past season, they've been insufferable. Their fans, you know, like I get, you know, Joe Burrow's really turned this team around. I think he's a fun player to watch. I think he's an excellent quarterback. I just think, you know, Bengals, you got your first playoff win in a long time. Be happy with that. Let's let the Rams win a Super Bowl here or whatever. So that's my thoughts on that. We won't go too long. This is a lacrosse podcast, not a football podcast. But we do have some PLL to discuss. It's been great kind of having some PLL news come out. So the PLL released the first half of its schedule. For week one, they're starting out in Albany this year. So Albany tends to be towards the end of the schedule. This year, they're going to open with Albany on June 4th to 5th. Then they're going to Charlotte for the first time, June 10th to 11th. Then they're going to Long Island, June 17th to 18th. Then they stop in Baltimore, your stomping grounds, June 24th to 25th. Minneapolis for July 1st and 2nd. Then they'll have a bye. And then the All-Star game is actually going to be in Foxborough this year on July 16th. So mostly similar spots of past, but a new spot is Charlotte, They haven't visited Charlotte, and we know that, you know, they, a lot of lacrosse fans have been clamoring for them to go to Charlotte. So nice to see them go there. Unfortunately, I don't know, you know, with my busy June, if I'm going to be able to make the Long Island or Baltimore weekends that I tend to try to make in the past. So fortunately, going to be a little bit tough for me, but hopefully maybe I can, you know, ship up to Boston and make that all-star game in July. What are your thoughts generally of these first 6 weeks, Adam?
Yeah, it's exciting to see a new venue for the all-star game. I think all of LAX Twitter rejoiced as a community for Michael Harrison for the Charlotte news. Excited to see that new destination there. And, you know, I'm curious to see what the next half of the season looks like, you know, if they go a little bit more west than Minnesota. I'm excited to see. So looking forward to hitting a bunch of these games up. Obviously, from my perspective, would love to see DC and Philly on that. And I know you'd like to see New Jersey in some capacity. So I'm excited to see what the second half of the schedule looks like. But wherever they're playing, I'm going to be watching and hopefully in attendance at some point. So really looking forward to the season. It just makes me that much more excited to know schedule drops means we're that much closer.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I'm hoping DC and Philly will be on there. I'd you know, be shocked if they weren't. And then a little part of me, yeah, it would be nice if they went back to Red Bull Arena. Now, you know, that's more of a dream, I think. You know, they've been there. They went there twice in 2019, so it's definitely a possibility. But I think I'd actually, you know, would rather maybe see them go to some different spots as well. But yeah, definitely Philly, DC need to be staples. We can both agree on that. But now that we have the first half, we still, you know, have some more tour stops revealed. Are there any cities that they haven't been to? You know, we mentioned Charlotte is one. Are there any other cities that they haven't been to that you're hoping that they stop by in coming up in the second half of the schedule?
Yeah, you know, we've been talking, I mentioned going out west, but what about a little further south, maybe still on the East Coast, somewhere in Florida? I think that'd be an awesome scene. It's a growing area down there. And I think somewhere in Florida would be an awesome destination. You know, if we're looking at stadium comparisons for MLS, Orlando City has a pretty solid stadium and a couple other places in Florida too. So maybe the Sunshine State wouldn't be a bad place for some lacrosse.
Yeah, no, I agree. And obviously there's quite a handful of players from that area down in Florida as well. I kind of want to see them go to Dallas. They had it on the schedule in 2020 before they had to, you know, change their plans. You know, and you know, maybe they play in the Star, the practice facility for the Cowboys. I think that was a great spot that the Rattlers played at previously. And I think the crowds were pretty decent too when the Rattlers played there. So that's one spot, you know, a growing hotbed in Texas. And then Nashville is more just, I think the atmosphere around Nashville, you know, growing sports town. Obviously they love their hockey there. I think that would be a great venue. I've been hoping that the NLL will go to Nashville, you know, hopefully in the near future, but I would love to see the PLL make a stop there as well. And, you know, if we are talking Western, I think San Diego would be a good spot that they haven't been, you know, been to LA, been to San Jose, heard both good things about the LA and San Jose venue, but why not go, you know, further south in California to sunny San Diego as well. I know the Joe Tsai connection's there too. So definitely thinking that's a possibility with that hosting an upcoming World Games as well. So those are a few spots I think could land on the schedule. Obviously, you know, they want to hit some of these. People were a little bit negative about them hitting a lot of the hotbeds areas, but that's kind of how they tend to do this, you know, starting out the season, it seems, and then they kind of, you know, move a little bit farther west as the season progresses. So I think we're going to see some unique spots coming up. I wouldn't take this first six reveal as it going them going back to all the same spots that they have in the past. So definitely think there's going to be a little bit more variety this year as well. But that's it for our PLL discussion. Really no player movement other than, you know, Tyrell Hammer Jackson got picked up by the Archers. So we talked about, Adam, last week, are the Archers going to go in the draft? Are they going to trade for a guy? Turns out they found a guy in the player pool. Vancouver Warriors face-off man plays defense for them as well. And he's actually right now currently sitting only behind Trevor Baptiste and Joe Nardella in terms of face-off percentage in the NLL. Right ahead of Jake Withers and TD Erland. So obviously faceoffs in the NLL are a little bit different than the PLL. So, you know, you can't really compare them apples to apples, but I think he's going to be a good option for them at the stripe. I think, you know, they might add another guy still in the draft, or maybe they ride with him in Gaffney, but I think it's a big pickup and one that, you know, quite frankly, I didn't really expect them to make. And Tyrell Hammer Jackson's not only a very good face-off man in the NLL. He's also a TikTok star. He posts, he's a logger as a full-time job, and he posts all his logging on TikTok. And man, this guy's a beast. You know, he's a grinder at the stripe. We already knew that, but just going off of what he does for his full-time job, yeah, he's going to be a force, I think, at the stripe. He's going to, I feel like even if he loses some of these draws, it's not going to be an easy win for any of these face-off men facing him. So good pickup by them, but in terms of player movement, really wasn't much other than that. Were some good NLL games. We're going to get to those in a little bit, but I actually got to sit down with Jeff Shatler and talk about what will be his final NLL season. So let's hear my interview with Jeff from earlier this week. Today on Pro Lacrosse Talk, I'm lucky to be joined by Jeff Shatler, 16-year veteran, two-time NLL champion, and forward with the Saskatchewan Rush. Jeff, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, buddy.
Yeah, of course. No, now we're recording this not too long after a 16-7 win over Panther City, where you recorded 4 goals and 3 assists. Talk about that big win for Saskatchewan and kind of getting you guys back in that win column.
Honestly, it was just a great team win. You know, our defense played unbelievable. They shut the door. They pushed the ball. Our offense finally started clicking. Shooter had an amazing game. So, you know, I think it was a boost of confidence for the boys, you know, coaching staff down, something that we needed. But again, we can't just dwell on that. That's over. We have a game coming up on Friday against Vancouver, and, you know, we just got to look ahead, and there's no looking back.
No, absolutely. And, you know, you beat Vancouver earlier this season as well. No easy wins, though, in this league, of course. And at the beginning of the season, you announced that this is going to be your final year in the NLL to, you know, cap off what a great career for you you've had so far. Talk about your decision to go on one more ride with the Rush this year.
Love the boys, love the atmosphere. Love the arena, love the fans. You know, I'm starting to fall in love with the province, living here now. So it's it would have been stupid of me for even to putting that thought in my head of going somewhere else. I wanted to finish my career here, and I'm glad I did, and I have no regrets on that side of things. But playing here, I'm very grateful that I've only played, in my eyes, only played for two teams, Buffalo, Bannon State drafted me, but I only played one game, and it was a nothing game at the end of the season, just to rest their guys. So I've never really considered that a team I played for. I played for Calgary for 12, and I've been out here for 4. So very fortunate, you know, to play for only two teams and to fit their mold and what they were looking for as a player and as a teammate. So I didn't see myself going anywhere. I know this will be my last year, and I've talked about it many, many times, and it just comes down to, you know, my kids and having time for them, you know, with their minor sports. And they're getting to that age where, you know, they want to start joining hockey, lacrosse, karate, whatever they want to do, I'll do. Never going to push them into anything. Mm-hmm. I'll just follow their lead and whatever they want to do.
No, absolutely. And you mentioned your time in Calgary. You know, you played 11 seasons there. Who are some of your mentors, you know, when you first got into the league and were growing as a player?
Honestly, it was, so senior A, I got called up by Troy Corley, and he definitely was one of my mentors for sure. I love that guy. You know, he taught me a lot about the game and Terry Sanderson. So those are my two coaches that I remember early on, and Terry Sanderson's a Hall of Famer, obviously. Mm-hmm. And just an amazing family all around. They know the game very, very, very well. and then I would say, you know, as players, Colin Doyle and Josh Anderson, I played on the left side with them when I was, about 19 years old, 18 years old, getting called up to senior A. So that was a pretty big experience, seeing all these guys coming into the room and knowing what these guys have accomplished. And I've seen them play, you know, at the Maple Leaf Gardens and winning championships. So it was a little starstruck for sure, you know, coming off, I was just a junior. So then, you know, I just kept playing with these boys, and they taught me a lot about the game. And, you know, I just took it all in. I still do. I still learn from the kids that I teach in my program, and they teach me new things and how to do drills different. So I feel like as an athlete in any sport, you need to be able to adapt and just listen to be not only criticism, but just new ideas. And if you could do that, you could teach this game for a long time.
No, yeah, I think we hear that a lot from, you know, people that have been in this league for a while, is just being a student of the game, no matter like where you are in your career. And I feel like that's kind of what you're, you know, saying right there.
100%. You know, I truly believe that, you know, everyone has another look at things that you might not see. You know, if you're too stubborn or pig-headed to understand it or listen to it, that's on you. But I think, you know, like you said, perfect words, student of the game, and we're always learning no matter what.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And, you know, in Calgary, you had a lot of success, you know, both individually and as a teammate. 2009, you won the championship. in the NLL. And then 2011, you won MVP and Transition Player of the Year. Talk about those accomplishments.
Yeah. So when we won in 2009, my buddy Kurt Miloski, he's the coach, obviously, for the Roughnecks mm-hmm. now. He had never won a championship. So that was a big thing that we were trying to push for, you know, push for a championship for him. And obviously, I'd never won one either at that time. And there was a lot of young, we had a young team. And we were first place for, I don't know how many years. We blew everybody out of the water. But sometimes, every time we went to playoffs, we always got snake bitten. And we'd either get kicked mm-hmm. out in the first round, second round, whatever it may be. And that's the nature of the beast. It's a one game playoff. So it doesn't matter how good you are. You just got to show up at the right time, get hot, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, it got frustrating after a while. You know, you're okay, we're first place. We're in where we want to be. We have home field advantage. And then again, same story. So 2009 was very, very special. We had a, you know, Brad Bannister, you know, he was a great owner. You know, he was a player's owner, I think. Mm-hmm. And he was a really good guy. And we had Terry Sanderson and Troy Cornelia that really, really pushed us, man. They were no joke. You know, they have a coaching mentality that's not, you know, a lot of people would agree with, but it works. I truly do. And, you know, it was nice to finally win it with the fellas. And we had a great teammate. We were very, very tight, very, very close. Everyone hung out all the time. And it was just a good feeling, and to finally finish a season after all those years and finally win one was like a feeling like no other. Mm-hmm. So I finally won a championship. That was my first championship I think I ever won in lacrosse, to be honest with you. And that I could remember that meant something as much as it did. So mm-hmm. that was very, very special. And that 2011 year, I started out defense. You know, I played defense in NLL for my first, 7-8 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then that year I started scoring more and more on transition. And then we were only playing with Dane Dobie and Josh Sanderson on the left side. And then I'd be the third one is the way it worked. And I'd push up and stay if I could, but mostly we wanted those guys out there. Cause obviously seeing what the numbers they put up. Right. So I was, mm-hmm. you know, I understood my role, and that's a big thing about being a part of a team for so long. You need to understand your role. And my role was to push the ball. And if the boys needed a rest, I would stay. The ball started going in for me, you know, and it started going in. And then my coach is like, well, why don't we run you out the front door? And then you stop transition on the back, going back. And then you can stay defense. Then if you want to come back up and play offense, you can. If not, get off. So then, you know, four time just really skyrocketed after that. But at that age, I could run pretty well. And mm-hmm. as you get older, as everyone knows, you know, your endurance goes down, you know, like your stamina and all that good stuff. So, but at that time I was in my prime, and I just felt great to be out there and helping my team. And I'm glad I was able to help my team for all those years. And I'm hoping to continue doing that success for the rest of the season. I know we do have 2/3 of the season left, and I'm just hoping that I could continue helping my teammates out in whatever way possible.
Yeah, well, you certainly helped in that game against Panther City. And let's talk about the Rush, too. You end up joining the Rush in 2018 and went on another title run with that team. Talk about, you know, your second NLL championship this time, you know, with the Saskatchewan Rush, and kind of what it meant to get that second championship. And you were also NLL playoffs MVP that year as well. So talk about that season.
Honestly, I think I just felt like I had a lot to prove, you know, not only to myself. You know, I had thoughts about retiring back then. You know, Calgary wanted me to go out the back door. So I felt like, you know, like maybe I lost my game or I couldn't stick with the boys up front. And, you know, you get all these thoughts going through your head as an athlete. You know, when you get snake bitten, you can't score. Like there's a lot of thoughts that go through your head, a lot of doubts and a lot of everything. But I could, you know, my family supported me, especially my wife, Lindsay. She's very good at that to get me back on track. Cause sometimes mm-hmm. I slip up, but I always do. But at the same time, you know, she pushed me in the right direction and said, you know, you can do this. And Brad Bannister was good buddies with Bruce Irvin, and they had a chat, and they said, well, Jeff Shatley, want to come over to our squad. And I talked to him, and the deal was made that day, and off I went. And, you know, these guys, you know, they gave me the ball. They believed in me. They put me on just about everything under the sun, and they just believed in what I could still do. And that was a great feeling. That's why I love these guys so much. I went from, you know, doubting myself to being a part of something really, really special. And the way they hold their dressing room is like no other. You know, they're family. There's no animosity. There's no anger. It's just like, boys, you know, we messed up. Let's move on. It's nothing. Mm-hmm. We don't dwell on the past. We don't yell at each other. There's nothing like that. So I never seen that in the game of lacrosse because I've been on some teams and some coaches that are, you know, they're pretty hard on you, where our coaches are like, well, there's nothing we could do now. We just got to move on. How can we be better? So that atmosphere really opened my eyes to the game and made me really fall in love with the game again. And I can't thank the Rush enough for that.
No, that's great. And talk about just the vibe, you know, this season, obviously a little bit of some struggles, you know, getting some wins, but you've played some tough competition and you have to feel good, you know, after getting that second win so far. So how are you guys kind of feeling now going into the, you know, second, third, I guess, of this NLL season?
I'm feeling confident. You know, that last game really gave us a little bit of confidence, which is great. I know we have a long way to go. We have Vancouver, Colorado, Texas. So, you know, we have four strong games coming up, and I really believe that we could do some damage out of those four games, and we could be right back in the mix. You know, I think we're sitting third in the West right now, which is unbelievable. I only won in two games. But, you know, the opportunities are there. We just need to believe in ourselves and believe in each other. And, you know, everyone pulls the rope together and we'll see what happens. Let the cards fall where they may, because you never know. You could have the best season. Like I said, you could have literally the best season. I've had seasons where I was 12-4 and lost in the first round. So it doesn't really, you just got to get to the playoffs. And, you know, it was a little scary there. We're going at 1-4. We're like, well, can we make the playoffs? And then all of a sudden you win one weekend and you're in third place, which is, you know, it's the nature of the beast. So I think we just need to, you know, believe in ourselves and believe in our in what our coaches have in place, and I think we're going to do some good work here in the next little half of the season. We've had some really good starts in seasons, and then you know fizzled off at the end. So maybe this is a good thing. We learned from our experiences early in the season, and we push through and win some games late.
Absolutely, and I want to get your opinion too on now that the NLL is so the first round will still be a single game, but they're actually now playoff series for the semifinals as well as the finals. You know, three game series. So you mentioned how, you know, it used to be kind of you could just kind of have a bad game and then you're bounced. What do you think of now the addition of playoff series and, you know, kind of going off of what other sports do? You know, I mean, I think NHL playoffs are some of the greatest playoffs, you know, atmosphere just because they're seven game series. And obviously we're only having three game series, but thoughts on, you know, the new playoff format in the NLL.
Yeah, I think honestly, I think it's about time. To be honest, you know, we should have been doing this a long, long time ago. So I'm glad that they've finally changed it up. I know first round, one gamer, but, you know, that's what you need, semifinals. And I know, like you said, you know, you have one bad game and that could be it. One bad penalty, a 5-minute major, they score three on it, it's over. And that's where, you know, when you put in that much work and that much time away from home and travel and all that, and it comes down to one penalty or one bad call, or, you know, at least to give you a little bit of a redemption in a game two, game three type of situation. So I think it's about time that they did it, and I'm glad that they have. But, you know, obviously it all comes down to cost and travel and arena time and NHL players. Like, so I understand that there's that part of things, but I'm really, really happy that they've included, you know, a couple more games in playoffs, because I truly believe we needed that as a league. And I think, like you said, atmosphere, man, people are going to be like, holy man, the game three, you know, do or die. It gives you that oomph instead of being like, okay, one gamer, it's over. See you later. See you guys next year.
Yeah, the storylines, I think, to come out of series are always great. It's always fun to watch, you know, all right, this team's down. Like, you know, even especially when maybe a favorite loses their first game, you know, rather than talking about how they got upset, you know, and, you know, could have been, was it a fluke or not? You talk about, well, how are they going to bounce back? Like, who really has the momentum in this series? I think it makes for some great storylines for the sport.
I agree, buddy. I think it's good.
Yeah, absolutely. And in addition to, you know, playing the NLL, you also have, you know, during your career, been able to represent the Iroquois Nationals in international play. How special is it to kind of get to play with your fellow Indigenous athletes?
You know, it was a lot of fun. You know, when I first had the opportunity, I was actually going to Prague with Canada. You know, I was going to go play with those guys, but then I got a call from Dewey Jacobs, and he said, you know, well, how would you feel about coming to play for Team Iroquois? And, you know, there was no question in my mind. I said, yeah, no, I'd love to. You know, I have Guy Schindler and Brett Bucktooth, good buddies of mine that I, you know, I was, you know, I made really, really good friends and really good relationships. And I had a lot of fun with those guys and the whole squad. And it was just a really cool experience and recognizing the culture because, you know, one, I grew up in Toronto, you know, in pretty much the ghetto, Rexdale, Jane and Finch area. And I didn't get much of my culture. My reserve was about 6 hours away, northern Wiquemucong, northern Ontario. So, like, we didn't get out there very often. So, when I got to go play for Team Iroquois, I learned a lot more about my culture, my heritage, and what this game means, and it got me more and more involved and interested in helping out the youth and, you know, seeing what I could do to help them out. But like I said, like when I grew up, I didn't grow up around that. I grew up in, you know, the heart of Toronto. And, you know, I didn't know anybody else that was Native in my neighborhood. So, you know, it was really cool that way. And I think they took me in like family, and I had a blast. I enjoyed it.
Awesome. And you mentioned, you know, helping the young people. You now are a coach as well, you know, with your Shatler Academy. Talk about what you're doing with that and kind of teaching the next generation of lacrosse players.
We got programs all over. So we do, you know, we do a trial lacrosse program through the SLA. We do public and Catholic schools. That's a big one. It's a lot of fun doing that. We also do trial lacrosse programs on reserves. I do it either through the Shatler Lacrosse Academy or the SLA, depending on, you know, the situation. And then I work with Standing Buffalo, a really cool community. You know, I'm on there for another 2 years, and it's been a lot of fun, a really, really big eye opener. You know, these kids, they love the game of lacrosse. They're not a very big community, about 500, but, you know, they have 10 kids in each age division. So, you know, it, with the numbers, we need to look at getting more, but at the same time, just the love and the respect they have for the game. And I think it's a really, really cool community to be a part of, and to be a part of that movement. It's the only, you know, community in Saskatchewan that has a team in each age group, which is amazing on reserve. So I think that on its own is a huge accomplishment. Russ Matthews started that up, and the people of the community are here keeping it going. So we do that. And then, you know, there's programs that I do all over with camps, and we have two teams that are going to go out of Regina. We have a 16U and a 14U team going out to California and San Diego. We're going to be looking into going out there. So then we have development programs in Saskatoon and Regina. So like I'm busy is basically what it comes down. It's just a very, very busy time in my life. And that's what comes down to like retirement. And you know, like I'm just so busy. And sometimes I forget about, you know, I want to do so much with this, this Shout Lacrosse Academy, but sometimes I misplace my time, and you know, my time that's free, I play lacrosse, the game I love. So I have to try to figure out how do I balance that out. And that was my thought behind the retirement, and I think it's the right decision. You know, obviously my family supported me up until now, and they've sort of said, you know, like you can continue playing. So it's in the back of my mind, but I know deep down I should call her a day.
Well, we're certainly looking forward to the rest of this season and seeing you continue to play in the NLL for this final season. Now let's move on to kind of our 5 and 5. So these are more, you know, fun answers, quick hitters. But, you know, my first one is I always ask, so what are some pregame superstitions or routines you have? And for some of the veterans, I like to ask, how have they kind of changed over the years?
For me, I always have I always eat at the same restaurant. That's a big one for me. I always click the door on both sides in the top. I say a little prayer before every game, obviously, ask for help and guidance, and to play for my kids. What else would there be? At halftime, and it was a thing that me and Dane Dobie used to do. We just go in the hallway and just hang out and just forget about the game. That was the big thing, and regroup for the second half. So those are my superstitions. I'm sure there's a lot more. I have a ton of them, but I just don't really remember. Those are like my main ones.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I would say something like that.
No, it's interesting too, the halftime, because you know, again, I tend to ask people about pregame stuff, but it is just as important to, you know, to kind of refocus during halftime too. So I like that. Number two, what has been your favorite venue to play lacrosse at? And that can be, you know, throughout your entire career at any time. So it doesn't have to just be NLL, it can be, you know, international play, senior A, junior A, anything like that.
I would say Madison Square Gardens. I got to play out in New York City. That was unbelievable. It wasn't the fan atmosphere. It was just the arena and the people that have been in and out of there. Madonna, Michael Jackson. Like, man, I was blown away. The posters that were on there. So I got the opportunity to do that. And then the other one would be Pepsi Center. Pepsi Center is always a great time, man. I love playing in Colorado. Back in the day, they used to throw pennies at you. I remember that. That was nuts. So we used to do that. And yeah, and then I obviously Saskatchewan, man. Saskatchewan's atmosphere. Obviously, the numbers have come down drastically just with the COVID thing. But February 28th, we are lifting all restrictions. So I'm hoping that, you know, Rush Nation comes back and they're ready to rock and we're able to play some good games.
Absolutely. One of the best atmospheres in National Lacrosse League. And so for number three, I like to ask is, what is your current stick setup in terms of head shaft and stringing? And in your particular case, there's a lot of significance to your dyed rainbow head. So talk a little bit about that significance as well.
My little man, Nathan Noel, he got diagnosed with autism about a year ago. So I you don't really think about stuff like that until it hits close to home. Right. So, it was something that I wanted to do. Like, what can I do to help out, not only my sister, but my nephew. Mm-hmm. And that was my thought. You know, I got a stick and it turned out to be like the autism colors. And I was like, what a great idea to, dedicate it towards him and try to, maybe just create awareness and maybe, raise a little bit of funds for his schooling or anything I could do to help out to get him and make his life easier is basically what I wanted to do. So, I thought that was a really cool way of doing it. And I thought that, this is my opportunity to maybe, do something to help him out. So, as for the stick itself, it's like a mid to low. I at first I didn't really like the warps. It took me a couple of years to figure it out. But when I was sponsored by the Warrior, that was one of the things that they wanted us to do. They wanted us to use the Warrior, the warp heads, to just get it out there, right? So that's when I started to use it. And it took me a little while to figure out, because they're very, very temperamental, I guess. Mm-hmm. You need to find the right one for you. And I finally did, and this stick is unbelievable for me. Gotten better and better, and with the stick in my hands almost every day, we're teaching and playing, and you only get better and better with it. So it's a great head, and that's the one I use. And a little bit of a storyline behind it, and if anybody wanted to ever donate or towards the cause, and you just go to shatlacrosseacademy.com and click the link, and any donations, they just go to his schooling and learning.
No, I appreciate you plugging that. We'll definitely put that in our show notes as well. So anybody listening, check out the show notes as well for that link, or go to the link that Jeff just gave you. I love that. I love reading the story that the NLL put out on it. And I think it's a great sentiment. And you really are bringing, I think, awareness to, autism and, kind of the challenges that autistic kids face. And the fact that, just because there's differences in their learning style doesn't mean that, they can't also have a great time as well.
Agreed. Agreed, buddy.
Number four, who has been the toughest player to face during your career?
Toughest player to face, I would say Kyle Rubish, to be honest with you. Kid's a beast. Hopefully he doesn't hear this, but he's really, really good on a one-on-one defender. You think you have him, and he's got like these bear arms that just wrap around you, and you get stripped every time. It's kind of like a cheat code he's got. So I would say he would be the hardest defender that I've ever played against by far. He's very, very good. And, he's only getting better. He's got a lot more years left.
Awesome. And then number five, if they made an NLL video game, who do you say deserves to be on the cover? And that can be a past player or a current player.
I don't know. I'd go with like a Mark Matthews or a Dane Doby, something like that. I know that they're on the top of their games right now, and they're looking pretty good out there, man. So, but you could choose a lot of great players. There's a lot of great players in our league. So you never know. Maybe someone with a good smile. I'm not too sure.
No, good answer. Good answer. Now for the off the field questions. The first one I like to ask, and it's kind of sports related, but not lacrosse related, is who's a player in another sport that you're enjoying watching right now?
I play in another sport. Is this past, present, or future?
Actually, it can be past, present, or current. Like it can be former players.
I would say, honestly, man, one of the guys, and two of them, honestly, and I like watching basketball, is Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. Man, those guys were just nasty. I watch a lot of documentaries on those guys, and The Last Stand is one of my favorites. Like it's just crazy. Yeah. So I think those guys are incredible what they did. And it was very inspirational for sure.
Yeah, no, that was an awesome documentary. And I'm sure there's going to be quite a few probably Kobe ones eventually coming out. I was more of a Michael Jordan fan when I was really younger. Then I really kind of learned to appreciate Kobe and like his longevity, I think, as the years went on. Number two, what are some hobbies or activities you enjoy doing when you're not on the floor?
I love to snowboard. Snowboarding is a big thing, but I haven't been able to do it as much because obviously one, I live in Regina now. I don't live about an hour from Banff, and then I don't really have time to do it. And plus I don't want to get hurt. That's another big thing, you know, like snowboarding is no joke. If you hit one rut, you're gone. So that's one thing. Definitely. I love playing golf with going out there in the summertime and playing around. You know, those are my two big things. And bowling is a big one. 10 pin, none of that 5 pin stuff.
Yeah. 10 pin for sure.
Yeah. 10 pin for sure. So I plan on joining a bowling league this year. Pretty pumped about it. Get some unis and go see if we can do some damage out there.
Yeah, for sure. You know, you're going to have to find some more competitive outlets after retirement. I know you're going to be still around the game, but that should be probably cool to look forward to the bowling league and then hopefully some snowboarding, right, once you retire?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah, that's the plan.
Next question, number three. What is your favorite spot to vacation?
Favorite spot to vacation? Cancun, Mexico, I would have to say. We got married up there, and me and my wife used to go there twice a year before this mess happened with COVID. So we're hoping to get back out there soon. But yeah, Cancun is one of our favorite places to go for sure.
Number four, what is your favorite meal, and do you prefer to dine out or cook at home?
Favorite meal? Well, I love lobster, man. When it comes down to it, I'm a big seafood guy. My dad's side of the family, he's a coaster. So I grew up around lobster, crab, mussels, stuff like that. And, you know, which is crazy. They used to call it the poor man's food. And now it's, you know, it's like $30 a pound. I would have to say lobster with some rice. And that's all I need really. And maybe some bread with some butter dipping sauce. And oh, buddy, that's my go-to right there.
Oh yeah. That sounds great. I used to, my family friends, they had a lobster business in Virginia. And they would get them down from Maine. So I worked for them and I would sell lobster and they would make some great lobster rolls or whatever. I used to boast too, because, you know, they were actually Maine lobsters, whereas a lot of stuff, you know, are sitting in the tank for a long while. They would like get them shipped down and sell them within like 4 or 5 days. So they're as fresh as you could get, I guess, in Virginia.
Oh, for sure. 100%. Yeah.
And then number five, what's a book, TV show or podcast that you're currently binging and would recommend?
Oh, I'm watching it right now. What's his name? Let me just take a double check. I got to say it properly. Bubba Fett.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh dude, it's great unbelievable. Show. Yeah. This guy's a unit. A lot of fun. I'm on chapter 6 right now. Pretty crazy. Yeah. No, it's a good one.
Yeah, no, I need to watch the latest one. The show I think got off to a little of a slow start, not as like good as Mandalorian at first, but now it's really starting to pick up. And obviously, you know, spoiler alert for anyone that's, you know, hasn't watched it yet, but with Mandalorian back in the fold, I think it's getting a little bit more interesting.
Yes, I agree. I just got there.
Yeah. So awesome. But that wraps up my 5 and 5. Like to end on one final question, and that's, what is some advice you have for a young player looking to one day play lacrosse professionally?
Honestly, I would say just believe in yourself. I know I get a bunch of messages on Instagram and you know, like kind of what should I prepare myself for? What, you know, what should I do? Honestly, you know, no one's gonna do it for you. You know, don't think that someone's just gonna hand it to you. And like I tell all the students that I teach, just because you put 2 hours in on the floor and take the next 3 days off doesn't mean anything. So you need to continue on with whatever craft you're doing, whether it's hockey, lacrosse, baseball. And, you know, you need to put the time and effort into it, because if you're not doing it, someone else is, you know, and, you know, you get what you put in, and you can't be disappointed if you don't make a team and you never did anything off floor or off ice. So that is totally on you and what you put into the game. And if you give 110 and you don't make the team, well, then, you know, you, at least, you know, you have no regrets and what you put in. So just work that much harder next year.
No, I think that's some great advice for our young listeners. Well, Jeff, we certainly appreciate you hopping on, and best of luck going forward with the Rush.
Awesome. Thank you very much, buddy.
So we appreciate Jeff hopping on. The Rush will take on Vancouver this Friday. They were off this weekend though. But it was another 7-game weekend in the NLL, including a back-to-back between the Firewolves and the Swarm. So let's start there, Adam. Friday night, Firewolves taking on the Swarm in Georgia. I predicted that the Swarm would probably come out and win this first one, and then the Firewolves would win the second. That's ends up what happening. You had the reverse, but these were both really tight games between these two teams. Not an easy feat playing each other on back-to-backs. Let's talk about that first game with the Swarm getting the victory in front of a home crowd. What did you see from this game that kind of stood out to you?
Yeah, you mentioned I was 0-2 for my picks, but I did predict the Wolves would score the most goals on the weekend, and they did. If you tallied both games together, the Fire Wolves came out victorious. But nonetheless, so game one, really close one, as you said, the Swarm ended up beating the Fire Wolves by a goal, 14-13. This one, you saw a couple familiar faces, and Albany Great Danes come out on fire in this one. So two best players of the game were Lyle Thompson and Joe Russell-Terrence. Lyle had 8 points in this one. Joe had 11. So they were both really dominant. And this one, you know, if you looked at the box score, you might think it was completely close the whole time. But the Firewolves scored the first two goals of the game, and the Swarm went on a 7-goal run. And it was looking like it might be a little bit of a runaway. But the Wolves kind of stayed with them, had a 3-goal and 4-goal run for themselves to kind of have this one keep going back and forth, and it was just a little bit too late for the Wolves. That Swarm got an empty netter before our friend Charlie Kitchen scored a late one for the Fire Wolves to keep it at a 1-goal game, but it was just a little bit too late. So this was a really fun matchup. I really enjoy, we'll talk a little bit later, but I really enjoy watching the Fire Wolves play, and the Swarm for that matter. These offenses are super potent, and with guys like Lyle and Joe and Charlie, definitely an awesome matchup for sure. So and I was really curious, as my matchup of the week was game two of the weekend for this one, but yeah, definitely a really fun one to watch, with the Swarm coming out victorious in Georgia. But yeah, definitely a fun one, and I'm looking forward to watching these teams compete, because they're pretty close in the standings, neck and neck after this week.
Yeah, no, and you mentioned two Albany Great Danes in the second matchup. They went up to Albany, and both players played pretty well in that one as well. Joseph Russell-Terrence, you know, had 11 points in that first game, finished with a measly 8 points for him in that second game, so not too shabby again. And along with Riley O'Connor and Ryan Banescu, had 7 points. They contributed to the 13-11 Firewolves win in that second game. You know, again, we can't speak enough about how big Banesh has been for this team. That acquisition has proven to have paid dividends. And pair that with Doug Jamison, who's only allowed an average of 8.6 goals since that Nighthawks blowout. And, you know, we get a rematch this weekend between those teams. And the Firewolves team is, again, they're looking to be, you know, right up there with some of the best of this league. You know, I don't know if I'd put them right there with the Bandits just yet, but definitely with Halifax and Toronto, I think. And, you know, the Swarm, they're in a good spot still. They're just haven't been able to close out these games. I think they're inexperienced, you know, on defense, you know, with the young players that they do have is, you know, hurting them a little bit down the stretch. But, you know, I still think they're playing much better than the start of the season. So they've always been hanging tight in these games, and they're not out of it yet. But do you think the Firewolves and Swarm could both make the playoffs? You know, obviously four of the top East teams will make it, and then three of the West with a wild card going to the best record, you know, in either the East or the West after those seven teams. So I don't know. Do you think the Swarm could be that wild card team? Do you think they could even sneak into that top four in the East? You know, what are your kind of thoughts on both the Firewolves and the Swarm's playoffs chances right now?
Yeah, I really like the Firewolves chances in particular. I just think they're kind of really meshing, as a couple of our former guests have said in the last few weeks. And I think their arrow is pointing up, and same could be said for the Swarm. But, you know, they are two games under 500. I know it's early in the season still, but every game kind of counts when you're under 500. So they have a couple games in hand, comparative to some of the squads below them in the standings. So it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward. I think there's certainly a chance they're in that kind of middle tier of the East at the moment. But if I had to water gun to my head right now, I'd probably say they won't make it, just based off of how strong the East and competitive the East is. But there's certainly a chance that the Swarm could make a little run with the talent they have.
Yeah, I kind of tend to agree. You know, I think the tough thing is you got Bandits, Thunderbirds, Rock, and Wings, you know, all up there with the Firewolves. So that's, you know, five teams essentially competing for four spots to make it to the East. And then the odds are that the odd team out, you know, is going to get that wild card. And I just don't know if the Swarm can continue to be in that conversation, you know. And the Wings now drop a game to the Rock, and so they're sitting at fifth. But I still think, you know, despite these two teams having really close matchups, I'd put the Wings ahead of the Swarm right now. where we're at. So yeah, it's going to be tough for the Swarm, but I don't think it's impossible. And I know that's not what you're saying either. You know, I think there's definitely a chance, but I tend to agree with you. If I had to pick the top five teams from the East, I don't think the Swarm would be in that. It's tough to say, you know, when team has Lyle Thompson on it, but that's kind of, you know, I think where we're at right now, and that could change, long season still, but they're going to have to pull out some of these wins going forward. You know, there's no moral victories really anymore going forward. Now, another East showdown between two teams, one we mentioned a little bit earlier, was the Thunderbirds and the Riptide. Thunderbirds end up winning 13-10. Both teams were looking for a win after losing the past week. Riptide, a tough one to the Bandits in overtime. Thunderbirds missing a few pieces in that game with the Rock, but they come out on top in this one. I think having Austin Shanks back in the lineup has been huge for this team. He's had 18 points through three games since returning to the lineup. So his presence was felt in this game once again with 7 points. And Kyle Jackson also played well, notching 2 goals and an assist after missing last week as a healthy scratch. So give credit to those two guys. You know, me and you both like the Thunderbirds in this game going into it. We thought the Riptide were going to keep it close, and they did. But I guess kind of felt that, you know, Coach Akersi's not going to let this team fall into a two-game skid. And I think when this team is at its best, they can beat anybody in this league. And they've certainly proved that. So, you know, give props to the Riptide, but the Thunderbirds, they get a much-needed win, you know, kind of on the road per se. They're at Hamilton playing these next two games. They're technically home games, but still playing away from Halifax. So it was nice for them to get a big win here against a Riptide team that's been scrappy and been, you know, pushing a lot of teams. But thoughts on the Riptide, you know, obviously tough to lose another close one, but they kind of proved this offense can hang with anybody, both against the Bandits. They held their own against the Thunderbirds. Thoughts on the Riptide in general, even though they're, you know, currently sitting with only one win?
Yeah, just based off of watching a large swath of their games, I don't think they're the worst team in the league, and they're super competitive. And, you know, Steve Orlman, he's been absolutely phenomenal for them in cage. He had another 48 saves in this one for the face masked headshot goalie for another week. So he's been playing really, really well for them. And it's a big pick me up to keep them in these close games. And, you know, when you have Jeff Teton, Callum Crawford on your roster, you're probably going to be in it to the end. So I think they're a little bit better than their record shows at this point in the season. And it's going to be tough from a playoff perspective for them to bounce back at this point with this many losses and less wins at this point in the season. But they're growing and building something there on the island. And it's exciting to see.
Yeah, no, and I think Connor Kiernan may have been the most underrated offseason move. He's just been as impactful as Jeff Teton and Callum Crawford has been to this team. And this Riptide team plays fast. You know, the offense can hang with anybody, and you never feel like they're out of it. Even, like, towards that end of the Thunderbirds game, you know, Ryan Cherefenko got his first goal for the Thunderbirds on that empty netter. But, you know, unfortunately, that ended up being the final nail in the coffin, 13-10. But you still never felt like the Riptide were out of it, even with 3 minutes left and down by three. And I think that's a testament of what Dan Lottasaur has been able to you know, do with this team. Because last season, you know, you could almost write them off. You know, they won one game, and a lot of those other games weren't very close. So, yeah, I do think this Riptide team is better than the record, which leads me to ask the question of the one-win teams in the Roughnecks, Riptide, and Panther City, which team do you think has the best chance of turning it around, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, I'll stick with the squad we just talked about in the Riptide. I mean, they're of their 7 games, 4 of them were 1-goal games, and the other 3 that were losses were by 2, 3, and 4 goals. So they've literally been competitive in every game this season. So I think with strong goalie play and a competitive offense, as we've seen from this New York squad, I'd have to go with the Riptide.
Yeah, no, and, you know, unfortunately, no small task with the competitive East that we just talked about, yeah, you know, not too long ago. But, yeah, I do think, you know, they're a team that can turn it around. I think they could play spoiler. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but, yeah, I think they're a team that could play spoiler down the stretch. I'm going to go, though, with the Roughnecks. I think they played this Mammoth team tight, despite not having Curtis Dixon. He was out due to illness. You know, when we get to our game picks, I might have a little upset alert with the Roughnecks. But I thought they played really, really well against this Mammoth team. Unfortunately, they kind of just ran out of gas. Del Bianco is still hanging in there in cage. You know, this team isn't as good as they were in previous years. They don't have as much talent. They're a bit younger than what we've seen. You know, obviously losing Dane Doby in the offseason, Tyson Bell. So, you know, this team is a little bit different than, you know, previous years, obviously, than when we last saw them in the championship in the NLL. But I still think they can kind of hang there. I just think that they're just not able to close out these games. And I think, you know, if we get a fully healthy Roughnecks team, they're going to be able to steal some wins too. Now, are they going to be able to turn around enough to make the playoffs? I don't know. I mean, the way the standings shape out, though, they just have to win a couple games and they're right back in the mix. You know, right now they're 1-4, but the only teams ahead of them are the Rush 2-4 and the Warriors 3-3, you know, for that third spot in the West. So, you know, San Diego and Mammoth sitting at 5-1 are in a pretty good spot to claim those top two spots in the West. But that third one is still up for grabs. And if they can rattle off a few wins against some Western opponents, I think they still have a shot to turn this season around. You know, they only played 5 games and they had that big layover between their last 2 games. So that didn't help them. So I think, you know, fully healthy Roughnecks team can turn it around. And although I think the Riptide are playing a little bit better than them, I think the Roughnecks have maybe a better shot of turning the season around this late in the game. So those are our thoughts on this past weekend. Looking ahead to this next weekend, Adam, what's your game of the week to kind of watch?
Yeah, you mentioned from a playoff perspective, I'm really interested in seeing this Wings versus Thunderbirds matchup right on Sunday. You know, we mentioned the Wings, they're one loss away from being at 500, and as competitive as they've been this year, that's not what I think a lot of people are expecting from that squad, to be at 500 at this point in the season. So I think a win's pretty important for them and for the Thunderbirds squad. Are they going to show their dominance against a team that a lot of pundits and fans thought was going to be closer to the top of the East? So I'm curious to see this one on Sunday, really looking forward to that matchup.
Yeah, no. And I think that's going to be one that has some playoff implications down the stretch.
For sure.
If the Wings can pull out a victory, shuffles the East a little bit, you know, puts them in a good position. Whereas the Thunderbirds, if they get that win, you know, they're looking pretty good, going forward down the stretch. I'm going another East matchup between two top teams, and that's Toronto Rock and the Bandits. Rock hosting the Bandits in this one. I really, really like this Rock team to maybe steal a win against Buffalo and hand them their first loss. You know, I think Buffalo's looked great, you know, this whole season, even, you know, against the Riptide, you know, despite, you know, letting up 17 goals, the offense was able to get it done, putting up 18. But last time these two teams played, it got chippy. It's always a tough matchup. Rock weren't fully healthy, where the Bandits had a lot of their guys. So I really like this Rock team to give them a good game. That's my matchup to kind of look for this weekend. That will lead me to my game picks. I'm going Roughnecks to start. Rush, Rock, Riptide. So a lot of R's there, 4 R's. Firewolves, Seals, and Thunderbirds in my picks. Where are you going, Adam?
I got to catch up to you in the standings a little. So first three are different. I'm going Mammoth, Warriors. I know it'll be an interesting one against the Rush, but I think they're going to bounce back and get in the win column. Going Bandits, sticking with undefeated until they're not. Riptide, Firewolves, Seals, and Wings. Because from a playoff perspective, I know I'm usually a homer in that way, but I for playoff implications, I'd love to see the Wings get the victory and muddle the East waters from a playoff perspective a little bit more.
Yeah, no home field advantage for Halifax playing in Hamilton, you know, not in front of fans. So, you know, I think they're getting more comfortable playing not in front of fans. You know, they talked a little bit about that, some of the players, how, you know, it's not too odd not having fans in the arena, but definitely kind of eliminates sometimes the home field advantage of, you know, playing in front of a home crowd. So, yeah, we differ a lot. This could really make or break a lot of us, or maybe we'll both split the games and and be kind of right where we're at. But those are our thoughts on this NLL weekend coming up. I'm actually going on vacation next weekend, so we won't have an episode next week for you guys, unfortunately, but we will have a Twitter space this week and next week. So don't worry, we'll still give you guys a lacrosse fix. Reminder, if you guys enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe, leave a 5-star review either on Apple Podcasts or now Spotify. Really helps us move up in the rankings. Big shout out to Jeff Shatler for coming on. You know, we're looking forward to seeing him in his final season. But we appreciate you guys tuning into this episode and every episode of Pro Lacrosse Talk.